Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on yet another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an incredible, incredible, incredible show for you today. Like always, I brought together a great group of people from different backgrounds, different industries from all over the world. We have someone here today from London, other people in Los Angeles, all over the country. But before I introduce my first guest, I'm going to invite you to do what I always invite you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the show. That's right. Someone somewhere needs to hear this message. They're an entrepreneur as well as you are, and they want to learn what we're talking about on today's show. So go ahead and text someone, tweet someone, send them the inbox, send them a carrier pigeon, whatever you have to do, but let them know the Roundtable Talk Show is live, because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're going ahead and sharing the show, I'm going to introduce our first guest. When I saw her information come across my desk, I was like, really? She wants to be on the Roundtable Talk Show? Well, come on in, Miss Ashley Haynes. Ashley is an actress and writer known for 20s, You're the Worst, and This Is Us. You can also find more information, check her out on IMDb. Good morning, Ashley, how are you?
Hi, good morning, Sharifa. I'm well. How are you?
I'm excited to have you here.
I'm excited to be here.
What made you decide to join us on the Roundtable Talk Show this morning?
Well, I mean, I'm a huge fan. I heard about your show, and I love meeting new people, connecting with people from different backgrounds, and I'm very opinionated. So I figured, perfect fit.
I'm really want to say, be careful what you ask for, because I always say I have absolutely no idea what I'm going to say. But I thought, because you are an actress and a writer, we tend to kind of see the world in a different way from other people. So as we go ahead and introduce the next guest, I want to kind of get your feel, you know, help me with some of the people, because I know this is going to be an interesting show. But tell us about yourself. Tell us what you do and what you are passionate about.
Well, I'm an actress. I'm originally from New York. I've been in LA for quite some time now. I'd say what I'm best known for is 20s, which is a show by Lena Waithe on BET and Showtime. I play Courtney, who is basically the nemesis of the work nemesis of the main character, Hattie. And what else? What I do in my free time is I'm actually an intuitive tarot reader, and I make intentional candles. So I'm all over the place, really. I've dabbled in photography and worn many
Woo! You was trying to go on and just keep. No, let's go back. Let's go back to this intuitive tarot reading. So are we going to get a reading today? I want to know, because I love it. I always ask my guests, and some of them say, I wasn't ready, I wasn't prepared, but that's the whole
cards right here.
Yes. What do you want to do it now? You want to do it later? Like, this is good. I told y'all, y'all just tuning in, y'all better share this show. What you want to do, Ashley?
I'll do it later. Once all the other guests are involved, I can do like a collective reading for everyone here right
nice.
Now.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. That'll be good. So, okay. I'm like, all these questions are spinning into my mind. But you're an actress, you're a writer, you're a how do you put all this together into one Ashley Haynes? Because that's the question people always ask me. You know, I have the talk show, I'm a business consultant, I do marketing, I do PR, I just opened my Busy Girl Productions company, I'm running for California State Senate. How do you package it all into one person?
I am the package, right? So there's that, but I think the through line for everything that I do has to do with connecting with people, me having a desire to help people, to move people, to inspire people, and self-creative expression, or self-expression in creative ways. So that's what's in, I guess that's what connects everything.
I think that's beautiful. Now, I have so many questions, so we're going to make a little bit more time for you a little bit later, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, specifically because some of the things that you mentioned, Ashley, as far as what you want to do in helping the world. Our next guest, Ms. Michelle Jewsbury, is an international philanthropist, a speaker, author, and coach who has traveled the world as an advocate for the less fortunate. In August 2016, Michelle focused her efforts on ending domestic violence. Her desire to help victims of domestic abuse came from personal experience in such a relationship. In July 2017, Michelle founded Unsilenced Voices, a 501c3 nonprofit focused on inspiring change in communities around the globe by encouraging victims to break free and survivors to speak up about domestic violence and sexual assault. She has since completed and published her personal memoir. Good morning, Michelle. How are you?
Good morning. I am great. How are you, Sharifa? Thank you so much for having me on your show.
You are so welcome. I love your banner, Unsilenced Voices. I love the message, Unsilenced Voices. I love the way that you separated un from silence to make it stand out. But one of the things, and I had this conversation with another one of my past guests who her mission is domestic violence, and she was so beautiful and she was so professional. And I said, you know what, when we tend to think of domestic violence, we don't tend to think of professional people or attractive people. We think that it can't happen to them. It won't happen to them. They have this degree or they have this perfect life. Do people often give you that same kind of feeling?
Well, through education, then we can teach people what domestic violence is. And there are no limitations to who gets involved in domestic violence, who the victims are, and who the abusers are. And oftentimes it takes a village to teach that, literally. So that's what we do in Ghana, Sierra Leone, and Rwanda. And we're expanding here to the United States as well.
Okay, let's talk about your book, But I Love Him. And I thought that was so profound because I've been divorced twice. I've been in situations that I'm like, people wouldn't believe, but the underlying message is always, but I love him. So I think that's powerful. What made you decide to name your book, But I Love Him?
Well, so when I escaped my abusive relationship, I just began documenting what happened to me. And it came out in like an aha moment. I ended up writing a 65-minute solo play. I love acting as well, Ashley. Not as successful as you in the acting world, but I still love it. And then after that, it ended up coming out in my book format. And the one thing that kept coming up over and over again is, but I loved him. I love him. I love him. And the cycle of domestic violence and why victims stay trapped in abusive relationships.
Often we hear that it's not only the love, but a lot of people may say that they do it for financial reasons or for security reasons, that if I love him and if I leave him, then what will I have?
Well, there's a lot of reasons why people stay in abusive relationships, and financial is one of them. Even with me, my abuser isolated me. I was up Northern California-ish, and I had no other resources, and I was scared. I was really, really scared because I wasn't allowed to have a job. He was a very successful entrepreneur, and leaving that relationship, I was like, how am I going to support myself now? Where am I going to go? And I was fortunate. I did not have children with my abuser, so leaving was a little easier, but it still was the forefront of my brain. Oh my gosh, how am I going to pay my bills? And it's not that women stay with abusers because of money. They stay because the abuser tells you that you're not going to have anything else. And it's a worry because of the narcissism that happens and you believe that abuser.
Yes. Was there an aha day or aha moment where you said, this is it, I'm done, I have to go?
Two, actually. The first time was when I found out he was having affairs on me. Subconsciously, I was like, okay, you beat me, you sexually assault me, you emotionally abuse me, but you cheat on me? For some reason, that it didn't work well with me. And then the next breaking point, the one that actually put the nails in the was when I found out that he had put his next girlfriend's head through a window, our window in the bathroom. And that's when I had to make a decision. Well, do I join forces with her? Do I speak up and go against Paul, or do I stay silent? And as you can see, I decided to speak.
Yeah. What motivated you, or what made you make the decision to write the book?
It was just sitting in front of my computer and writing. And when I started documenting, it was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is me that I'm reading about. And then after I performed my play, people started coming up to me and saying, oh my gosh, thank you so much for speaking up. There are so many others of us out there who have experienced abuse. And it's because of you now that I feel confident enough to speak up against my abuser. And that's when I knew I had to put all of what happened to me in my documentary.
Okay, Michelle, we're going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, who knows a little bit maybe about angry people, Mr. Doug Knoll. When you face angry business partners, disgruntled JV investors, unhappy subordinates, or out of control clients and customers, you can gain a huge competitive advantage. If you are ready to stop the drama and turn difficult relationships into profit, Doug can help you. He left a successful career as a trial lawyer to become a peacemaker. His calling is to serve humanity, and he executes his calling at many levels. He is an award-winning author, teacher, professor, and trainer. Doug's work carries him from international work to training life inmates to be peacemakers in their prison communities to helping people resolve deep interpersonal and ideological conflicts. Good morning, Doug. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Sharifa. Good morning.
When I was listening to Michelle, all I could hear in my voice was, I know Doug is going to have some thoughts on this. Because you work with prisoners who are doing life, and I think we would call them angry. Right.
Yes, I've been working with my co-founder, Laurel Coffer. We founded the Prison of Peace Project in 2010. And our first training was 17 women in the largest, most violent women's prison in the world, here in California, which happened to be about an hour and a half from where I live. And today we are now in 15 California prisons, a prison in Connecticut, 14 prisons in Greece, and we're starting up in Nairobi and also in Italy. Of course, everything's on hold now because of COVID.
Right.
So we're working on distance learning. We have about 2,000 inmates enrolled on our distance learning program, and we're about to video most of our core curriculum so that, assuming the technology exists in the prisons, the inmates can continue to learn while we are outside, because nobody wants to go in and get sick and nobody wants to get anybody sick. What I've learned over the year, my work, if you told me back when I started practicing law that I would be teaching murderers to be peacemakers, I would have said, what are you smoking? My journey has been really strange and interesting and beautiful. But where things really changed for me was when I went back to school in the 90s and got my master's degree in peacemaking and conflict studies to understand human conflict. And that led me to neuroscience, which then led me to a deep study of emotions. And that ultimately led to the development of some skills that I teach about that allow you to calm any angry person down in less than 90 seconds or less, based on how our brains work. And we took when we started the prison project, a lot of people were very skeptical of this. And so when we started the prison project, this became our foundational skill. And we've literally taught 20,000 inmates how to calm themselves down and calm down other angry inmates to stop the violence. And they can literally do it in less than a minute. And then from there, we train them in advanced emotional management, emotional competencies, and then give them negotiation and mediation skills so that they can be true peacemakers in their prisons. We've had about a little less than 1,000 inmates released over the years, zero reports of recidivism. We have not had one of our inmates who've graduated from our program reoffend when they've been released. It's pretty.
I need that skill, man.
Yeah. Well, DougKnoll.com. DougKnoll.com. I've got a ton of resources on that website and on my YouTube channel. Of course, if you want to get more advanced training, we can talk. But DougKnoll.com is the place to go. My fourth book, Deescalate: How to Calm an Angry Person in 90 Seconds or Less, is an Amazon bestseller. And it's in its second printing. It's in four languages. And this stuff is starting to resonate with people. Not everybody, because there are a lot of people who are really afraid of emotion. And because our society, our Western culture, is very biased against emotion. We have this myth of rationality. And neuroscience teaches us that we're 98% emotional and 2% rational. And yet we spend all this time in our educational system developing the task-focused part of the brain, the rational side of the brain, and we completely ignore the social system, which is, it's called the default mode for a reason, because we're in our default social system mode all the time. And yet we're taught to be afraid of our emotions. And so when Michelle talks about domestic violence and abusers and narcissists, these are people who have been deeply abused in childhood, and they are simply acting out the programming that they were given by their parents. In prison work, you know, I've come to realize murderers are not born. Murderers are made by their parents or their lack of parenting.
And I want to actually have that conversation, because we're going in so many different directions. And I was going to get, I have so many questions on that, Doug, but I want to go, I always love this show because I tell people I don't select the dates the guests appear. They just select the date, they're here, and somehow, some way, it all comes together. We have Ashley over here who's passionate about acting, writing. She's an intuitive tarot reader. Emotions, a lot of emotions going in that area. Then we have Michelle, who's passionate about her cause, which is domestic violence. Doug, who works with angry inmates and people in general to help them understand their anger and their emotions. So I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, who fits right in with everyone else, Mr. Chima. Chima is an architect, but he's also an art promoter, writer, film and documentary maker. His focus is on giving a voice to the voiceless, and has always felt his calling was to give back. So he came up with the idea for Fund Donor a few years ago while on safari in Malawi. Good morning, Chima. How are you?
Afternoon. sounds nice to hear from you, but I felt a little bit small as I'm listening to everybody's stories.
No, not at all.
I went on safari a few years ago in Malawi. We went to, there was a school being built, and I've always had this passion and this feeling that that's it, that's my calling, because I've done lots of art projects with, especially with young kids, and empowering them, giving them a voice. And the main outfit I promote is for artists. It's called Kambani Arts, and we just promote arts mainly from Africa. And we went on this safari, went to this school to have a look at this incredible school that's been built. And we didn't find a school. We didn't find anything. We just found some bare land and an old signboard with some writing on it. And I thought, what happened? There was a few people milling around. They didn't want to talk or share what happened. But when we started to engage, I realized, you know, this was a mismanaged project. The $11 million worth of funding had gone in there and just disappeared. And that really, really hurt and made me sad, because, I just thought that's such a shame, such a waste of all that resource in a promising land just to go to waste, where there's so many people that could benefit from it. And it kind of inspired a spark in me about what I really could do with this. And when I got back, I started thinking, and then I came up with this fund donor idea, which was basically some platform that we could use to engage and empower young people to give back. That's basically what it is. And at the same time, we could, you know, get charities more accountable, because sort of things like that wouldn't happen. And so those two things are the core for what birthed the idea, basically. And we're kind of like going to crowdfund soon to kind of build this idea to get young people empowered and engaged in charity giving. And it's a whole network of things. If I have enough time, we can share a bit more about it. But it is clearly something that will be fun for young people, will be engaging them. They can use it to earn some extra cash, some income for themselves. They can use it to fund their education. They can go on mission trips for charity work anywhere in the world by simply following the platform. And the idea is so simple that you sometimes wonder, is it going to work? Because it's that simple, but it is. And all it is really getting like role models and celebrities involved and getting them to donate some time. And in exchange for that, anybody, any of their fans can donate a dollar to their charity, whatever charity it is. And all that money goes to the charity. And at the end of a time frame, they will give that experience to whoever wins it. And then whatever they earn goes to charity. And in the process, they earn something for themselves to fund their education, to do something charitable, and to big up their life. And that's how we're trying to really get young people engaged in what we do. So that's kind of what I really would very keen to push to do. And I have done some few things. I mean, not, I mean, I think the biggest thing I can talk about was getting a young kid to Buckingham Palace to be a guest of the Queen. And he was from a village in a very rural place in Nigeria. He won a competition, of an art competition. We managed to get him all the way to the Buckingham Palace to be curated for a, you know, they curated a special artist's work for him. And he was kind of like a talk of the time.
I think really that's powerful. I think that's powerful. Can you get me to Buckingham Palace? I don't want to win a competition. I don't even want to enter the competition. I've been watching all weekend The Crown on Netflix.
Let me just call
the Queen.
Just a second. She's a bit. It's a busy at the moment. Do you want me to call back and I'll arrange it for you?
That's what I'm saying. Arrange it for me. I don't want to keep calling her. She's busy. So just arrange it, because I've been watching The Crown all week on Netflix, and that's where I want to be. Okay.
No, but when
I talk to people about where they want to be, what I think is when we're all making this world a better place, I think we do have to take time to have fun, to laugh, to be there for each other, motivate each other. And that's exactly what our next guest does, Ms. Holly Corbella. She is the CEO and founder of Parties by Bella, a lifestyle company in home and online pop-up stores. And she does larger events as well. Good morning, Holly. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm excited to have you here.
I'm excited too. Before we like get into the whole business aspect of it, I kind of, after hearing everyone talk, I wanted to throw out there that not many people know this about me, because I don't really talk about it, but I am also a licensed social worker.
Oh, wow.
So I work with domestic violence victims, and I travel a lot and do a lot of volunteer out of the country and whatnot. So I wasn't expecting to talk about that today, but after listening to everyone, I kind of, you know, I just wanted to throw that out there, because it's a really great group of people on here today, I feel like.
Well, thank you. I think it was very authentic of you and very vulnerable of you to even mention that. And that's what we do here on the show, is because I get nervous at times, especially in the beginning, to throw five complete strangers together. I remember one show in particular, I had this lady who was just so corporate. Like when we were doing a pre-show, she was just corporate. She was very straight-laced, let me say. And then I had a lady who suffered from mental illness. She suffered from schizophrenia on the show, and she had written a book and she wanted to share her experience. And I could tell the mental illness could come up certain times in the conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm like, how are they going to mesh? And the lady with mental illness started talking. And then all of a sudden, the corporate lady was like, I understand. My cousin has schizophrenia. I feel you. And they just took over the show. And I was like, wow. This is cool. So thank you for sharing that, Holly.
Yeah. So my number one passion is to travel. And I've always been a traveler. And when I got my degree, I got my master's, and I was working at 9 to 5, I kind of knew, in order to keep my passion alive and being able to travel, like especially out of country weeks at a time, I needed to figure out something I could do in order to do that. So that's when I started to look into, you know, companies that I could join. And long story short, I did join another company. It went well. And then I decided to start my own business so I could work for myself. So that's Parties by Bella's. It is, it's a lifestyle company. It is an adult party company. So it is kind of adult in nature. A lot of people, when they hear what I do, they either get really excited or they don't want to talk to me anymore, because they're just, you know, nervous because they don't know what's about to happen. But from working with like other companies and other people, I feel like ours, they're fun. Obviously, you can't not have fun. But they're also, we like to throw in like the educational aspect, and we do a lot of one-on-one, like couples, like we'll get together with like a couple and stuff like that. I also think they're really classy. A lot of people tell me that we can make them feel like really comfortable talking about things that a lot of people, you know, aren't really comfortable to talk about, like talking about. But yeah, I feel like we kind of, you know, incorporate some great stuff at these parties. Currently now we're doing virtual, obviously, but it's a lot of fun, especially our larger events, which we've kind of like slowed down on. Those are a lot of fun also, but yeah, I mean, I love what I do. I love that I'm able to travel. I just, you know, right before COVID, I was able to take a month off. So it's great.
I think the key here and what brings it all together is that it's important to talk. It's important to have conversations because the more you know about any subject, the better it is. Now, I want to come back to you, Holly. I want to go back to Michelle. And I want, Michelle, if you had any thoughts, because I have some more questions for Doug. But did you have any thoughts, Michelle, on what Doug had to say earlier?
Well, I've already reached out to Doug because I want
during the show, Michelle, like, let me work first, you know,
while we were having the conversations. But I think it's so important because he said something that is accurate in society, right? Hurt people hurt people. Yes. And the reason why our prisons are so full of people and inmates is because of the nature nurture controversy, yes, but it's all because of your upbringing, you know, what your parents did and what they did not do. And you get trapped in certain situations based on how you were raised. And unfortunately, a lot of people who hurt people are hurting so much inside. So even with my abuser, it took me a while to get to this point, but I have forgiven him for what he did to me. He beat me multiple times to where I should have died. Black and blue, sexual abuse. You know, the positive thing about this is I've been able to turn lemons into lemonade. But back to him, I've realized that he has so much pain in his life that he has to overcome his challenges in order for him to heal. Right. And you have to heal in order to heal. And in order to do that, you need the education, the help to do that. So I love what Doug is doing.
Is that a new book, Michelle? You got to feel in order to heal. I like that. I like that. But one of the things that I don't like people to say is the word normal. Like, I don't like that word because what's normal for me is not necessarily going to be normal for you or for anyone else. Like, you, when you think of some people, it's normal for them to go to the kitchen table and there's shotguns on the kitchen table because that's just what we do. Where if somebody else walked in and they saw a shotgun on the table, they run. They'd be like, oh my God, these people have guns. Or, I mean, there's so many different examples of what we consider normal. And then we go out into the world and we hit everybody else. And it's like, okay, well, you know what? That's not normal for them, and we have to adjust and relearn as part of our healing process.
Yes, definitely, because you know what one person experiences is different for somebody else. And I've met people who have had, you know, fairy tale lives where they've grown up with a silver spoon in their mouth, and then those people who have struggled, who have lived on the streets, who are from the slums. You know, I worked on Skid Row for 6 months. I talked to a lot of women who lived on Skid Row, and life is different for every human being, and especially traveling internationally, like Chima said. Life is so much different in Africa than it is in America and all over the world. So we have to take that into account when we talk to other people about their experiences, because ours are not a mirror of theirs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we say about actors, Ashley, is that you have to become the role. You have to become that person. So you have to step into that experience, step into who they were. And so often actors can lose themselves in a role for months being this other character. What do you do, Ashley, to be able to step into to that other person's normal, that other person's experience?
For me, I think it's a step-by-step process, right? And so what's really helpful, I think, and what makes good acting and genuine is when you're able to find parts of yourself in the role, and that's your way through. So, I mean, and that may sound kind of, I don't know how it sounds really, but
it sounds good to me. I think you were going to say it might sound kind of cliche, but I'm a big cliche person. It's true.
Right. Yeah. But it absolutely is true. I mean, and it doesn't matter. Like, I don't have any experience as, you know, being a doctor or an astronaut or a physicist. Right. But I've played all of those roles. And how do I do that? It's in realizing that despite someone's differences in their life experience, there are certain commonalities that we all have, whether it's like wanting to be loved or feeling accepted, or even the feeling of being inadequate in certain ways. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's finding the humanity in the character, and that allows you to bring life to these characters, right?
Yes. So Doug, do you find the humanity in the prisoners doing life?
Oh, yes. It's amazing to watch. We start off with people who have obviously killed people and have all their stuff. And we watch the transformations occur right in front of us over a period of a year. And I mean, it's even thinking about it now, it sends shivers up and down my spine to watch how we can take people who society has thrown away and said, you're worthless, and turn them into really powerful peacemakers and human beings, and completely changing their lives and the lives of their families. And the way we do that, it's very simple. It's a phrase that I use to describe the work: learn how to listen other people into existence. And when you can learn how to listen another person into existence, everything changes.
Okay.
Whether you're serving time in prison, or whether you're a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, or you're a teacher or a pastor or whatever. And I've told all these people this stuff. As Ashley was saying and talking about how she gets into her roles, the human brain is the human brain. And our human brains are the same around the world. There are some superficial cultural differences, but the brain is still the brain, and our brains still respond exactly the same way and have one fundamental need that is never met. And that is the need to be emotionally validated. And when we learn how to emotionally validate each other is when we are the safest and have the most trust and the deepest connection. And we do that, as I said, by listening each other into existence. And there's a skill set that you have to master that's counterintuitive and counternormative. But when you master it, then all of a sudden your life changes forever. It's amazing.
Doug, when I listen to you, I listen to a lot of technical, right? So when you say emotionally validated, what I hear as a person who doesn't have your same experience is the need to be loved. Is that what you're saying?
It comes down to that, but we all have the same emotional experiences. Ashley was just talking about that. Mm-hmm. And the reason that people relate to great acting is because the great actor provides an emotional experience that we can all relate to. And what I teach is that once we understand that we're all the same emotionally, and we all have the same emotional needs, that we can build a deep, intimate connection with each other, whether we're in a romantic relationship or a business relationship or a hierarchical relationship, like a teacher and a student, it really doesn't matter. We can build a relationship that really is deep and authentic, and we can do it very quickly once we understand that we are 98% emotional and only 2% rational, which is a huge insight that people have to make.
But so often people make it seem like that's the bad thing. You know, growing up, certain people in my family, not everyone, I will say that because my family tunes in, so it's not everyone, but I grew up with the whole, Sharifa, you're too emotional. You're too emotional. You're too emotional. And I always felt like, okay, but maybe you guys should be more emotional, be more in touch with what you feel. Doug, I'm enjoying this conversation. So I want to just allow Michelle real quick to comment on that.
Well, I think that it's important to be more emotional. I think that, so I do a lot of coaching and training and speaking on stages now. And one thing that we teach, not just to feel to heal, but you also have to not suppress your emotions, right? You have to be emotional because there's something called adverse childhood experiences. Mm-hmm. When you experience some type of trauma as a young adult or a child, and you try to hold on to it in your body and you don't speak up about what happened to you, it comes out in physical and or emotional ailments as an adult, autoimmune disorders, chronic fatigue, headaches, obesity, you name it, stress, anxiety. And in order to not have that occur, you have to be emotional. You have to be able to express yourself, but learning how to do that is the process.
Yeah. And let me just add that the problem is that our Western culture has privileged rationality over emotions for over 3,000 years.
Yes.
And neuroscientists in the last 20 years have completely blown that myth apart. We are emotional beings. We're not rational beings. I teach decision-making at Pepperdine. I teach graduate students how to make hard decisions under uncertainty and ambiguity. And we talk a lot about the fact that every single decision that we make is an emotional decision. There is no such thing as rationality when we're in decision making, but we can use rationality to help us. but it's primarily emotional. And the problem that you point out, Sharifa, is all our families, I'm going to make a blanket statement, all of our families believe that rationality is important and having negative emotions as a child is a bad thing. And that, to me, the ACEs study that Michelle just referred to out of San Diego at the Kaiser Foundation has demonstrated without question that if you want to abuse your child, emotionally invalidate that child. And that child will grow up to have lots and lots of problems. And unfortunately, that's what parents do. They emotionally invalidate their children, almost 100%. Certainly happened to me. And I grew up in affluence. I mean, I grew up in San Marino. You guys know where that is. You're Southern California people.
I do.
I was third generation and I had a horrible childhood. Not my parents loved me, but they had no clue about the emotional intelligence, the emotional competency that are needed to raise children.
I'm going to jump in real fast. I'm so sorry to do this, but what you're saying, Doug, is very, very accurate, right? And unfortunately, how we're raised is how we react and act when we become an adult. But I had a different experience. You know, I grew up with a mom and dad who loved me, but they also didn't know how to emotionally take care of me. So then it led me down this path to where I grew up thinking that I did something wrong. Now, my parents were amazing. I love my mom and dad. They're no longer with us. And I pray to God that one day I get to see them in heaven again. But because of what happened to me in my life and my childhood, it allowed me to get involved in a domestic violence situation because I devalued myself. Right. I didn't understand how to emotionally take care of myself. So then I jumped in to a very toxic relationship where he was giving me a little bit of affirmations here and there, and then would beat the hell out of me afterwards. So it was this dichotomy, right? And it's really difficult to teach people growing up, teach children how to be emotionally stable, like you were talking about.
It's actually quite simple. The problem is that parents don't want to learn the skills. That's what's amazing. And my parents love me, and my mother's still alive, and I love her to death. They just didn't have the skill set. And I grew up with a lot of challenges.
But isn't it also the times that are changing? Like in my parents' generation, one of the things that they also always said is children are to be seen and not heard.
Right.
Now, my kids right now are 23 and 26. And I always had that conversation of you're trying to be your child's friend as opposed to being their parent. And I always felt that if you take away a child's right, if you take away their voice, you take away their right to say no. You take away their right to say, to create boundaries. So I always said to my children, you can say whatever you want to me. You just can't say it however you want to say it. You know, say it respectfully. But I think, you know, times are changing where we actually want to talk and have conversations with children as opposed to just seeing them as bodies over there, I guess.
I would add just to that. I don't want to talk to children. I want to listen them into existence. I want to validate their emotional experience. And I don't care what they say. They're having an emotional experience. I want to be present with their emotions and help them mature emotionally. There's a whole process in the brain called emotional categorization and emotional granularization. It's a cognitive process they have to go through and learn from 18 months to 5 years of age. I want to make sure that every child goes through a positive emotional growth experience while the emotional centers of their brain are maturing. Mm-hmm. And that's the secret.
Yes. Thank you, Jade Elizabeth. Jade Elizabeth said, Doug is so right. So she's commenting and agreeing with you, Doug. I want to kind of go over to Holly. You're a social worker. When you hear Doug speak in his passion, and you hear Michelle speak in her passion, and Chima speak about what he saw in Malawi, and Ashley, how she goes into her experience. What are your thoughts, Holly?
I was just thinking how I have so many questions. I've actually wrote some down, which I'll ask them later, and how I'm like speechless for the first time because going into this, I didn't expect it to go this way. But
Is that a good thing?
I completely agree because I've had some amazing life-changing experiences traveling and volunteering. Like I volunteered in Thailand in a school that didn't have enough teachers, and I taught English. I remember day one, I got in there thinking I was going to have an aide that spoke like English and Thai, and they were like, no, like, go. And day one, I was just in there, the language barriers, it was crazy. The next day, I had, you know, a better understanding of what to do. But those kids were so grateful after those couple weeks of me being there. And it's like, they made me these most amazing, like, thank you cards, and all the spelling was wrong. And I have them all framed around my house. And just, I wish everyone could experience stuff like that. It really does change you and make you realize how, you know, good you have it. And
I think it's so different
to do that.
I wish there was like a way that people could. I'm doing a reality show right now about my business, but I did want to plug the company that's doing that about something. I haven't told anyone yet. Not that I think anyone's going to take the idea, but I want to do like more of a documentary about being in other places so people could, you know, see how other people live and kind of in a way show that. Because when I do travel, I take a lot of videos with the people I'm with and a lot of pictures, and I try to post them and be real public about it. But it's just, it's not the same unless you're there. But I'm going to try to pitch like a documentary, hopefully when this is all over, to try to, you know, open.
Well, let's talk.
Open it up a little bit.
Let's talk. It may be something we want to do at Busy Girl Productions. So okay. Ashley, you got a feel for our guests. We got Holly, Chima, Doug, Michelle. We got our own energies. What kind of reading we going to do today? What's your feeling? What's the message?
That is an excellent question. Okay. So it's so funny because I'm like, oh my God, I have so many questions too. Wow. But I guess time is limited. So let's just do, I'll just ask what general guidance that spirit has for the energy here. Okay, so I'll just say a quick prayer. Father, Mother, God, Spirit, Universe, my angels and guides, the highest spiritual beings of my ancestors and higher self, all divine entities, who love mankind. Unconditional love, grace, compassion, healing, protection, assistance. Thank you so much for allowing me. Well, thank you for blessing me, Tara. Tap into the collective energy of the people we have.
Keep getting ready. Holly, I love your idea of creating that documentary. I think it's important for people to see that our lives are different all around the world. Mm-hmm. I travel as well. And my first humanitarian relief work was in Guatemala, and then Kenya, and then India. Now I've been to multiple different countries, third world countries, helping. And you have to see it. You have to feel it. You have to taste it. You have to smell, you have to be there, and it's so different taking pictures and trying to show people. And it's heart-wrenching, but you know, what I've noticed is like the African culture, those people are they would give you the shirt off their back and they own nothing else.
Exactly. I've been to Africa. I had that same experience though in Vietnam though. A family took in me and a couple friends who were having trouble finding a hotel, like 7 of us, into their house and let us stay there for 3 days in Vietnam. And I just remember being like, this would never happen in New Jersey. They would just laugh at us and walk away. And they gave us cooking classes and taught us how to catch fish with our bare hands. And it was amazing. But yeah. It's just like, I wish everyone could experience that. So that's why I was like trying to figure out a way. And I think, I mean, I feel like a documentary, it's not, you know, it's kind of like the best you could do sometimes, because not everyone has the means to travel and do stuff like that. But I love to travel and volunteer. It's like the best, nothing better than that.
Yeah, we're doing a documentary.
That is one thing I miss so much.
Oh, it's killing me. Oh my gosh.
Yesterday I had a conversation. I was having a conversation with somebody who the lights went out for an hour. And when I was growing up, we had light once, twice, maybe 3 times a week. That was it.
So we were used to that. Once a week, 3 times a week?
Yeah, electricity. We had it 3 times, 2-3 times a week. We had to fetch water with the buckets from the well. We had to, you know, drive out to the tank where the waters were and collect and come back. Or go to the stream when I was in the village. And then I see people that was mourning and complaining and mailing all over the place about no electricity for 2 hours. I can't charge my mobile phone. And I'm thinking, you know, it's like, you need to go and see some life, really.
Yeah, see some world. Experience, right?
Absolutely. But then at the same time, I lost power the other day. And of course, instantly, I'm like, ugh. And I get like all like upset about it. But then I think about the time I was in Ghana and an entire village was watching a little television.
Yes.
And like that was, they'd get like an hour of television, like a week or something. They would say, because that's all the power they could do. And they were all so happy.
Yeah. And like, that's what I tell my kids. I'm like, you guys have first world problems. They try to complain, and I'm like, first world problems. Ashley, you ready for us?
I am. Wow.
How many cards are we going to do? Because we limited with time.
Right. I understand. So we actually, it's a 3-card reading.
I like that.
The overall energy of the message is the 7 of Swords in reverse, which I think is really interesting considering the topic of discussion or the general vibe of the discussion today. So the 7 of Swords in reverse is the releasing of truth or truths coming to light, right? So upright, the 7 of Swords is deception, lying, betrayal, manipulation. So in reverse, this is all of these secrets coming out. And I really feel like this is closely connected to just the general concept of authenticity and realizing your own truth, awakening to your own truth. So the first card here is the 10 of Wands, which really is carrying burdens. But when it came out, the word that came to mind was adversity, followed by the 8 of Cups. So this is walking away, emotional detachment. But notice how the 8 of Cups is actually facing this 10 of Wands. So in order to get this 10 of Wands in reverse and release these burdens, release our the past, whatever adversities we may have experienced, it requires confrontation, right? So the only way you can emotionally detach from it is by looking it square in the face, which will bring you to the 4 of Cups in reverse. So the 4 of Cups upright is this emotional feeling of dissatisfaction. In reverse, it's coming out of that. So healing. And then I just want to say underneath the 7 of Swords in reverse is the 3 of Swords, which has to do with heartache. But then underneath that is the Chariot, which is victorious movement forward. So again, I do feel like it's very on par with what we've been discussing.
Okay, so sum that up for me. What the general energy means that as a people, we need to heal, we need to release. I'm trying to...
Right, exactly. So in order to heal, in order to emotionally detach from the burdens that we've carried, we have to feel it to heal it. As who said that earlier?
Michelle.
Yeah, exactly. You have to feel it to heal it. And that will bring you emotional release, right? So that you can leave this state of dissatisfaction to come into a satisfied, fulfilled life.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, she did her reading and said, feel it to heal it. That's what we came up with.
I love it. I love it.
Thank you.
Have you had a reading before, Doug?
My wife is a spiritual intuitive. I live
with
her.
Really?
Oh, wow. See, I told you.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I don't know how this works. I'm like, okay, Doug, he's this guy. He's very analytical. Oh, I'm not supposed to say that anymore, huh? You're that's emotional. Fine.
I am very analytical, but I'm also very emotionally aware. And so it didn't come naturally, let me tell you. It took a lot of work. And to Michelle's point, you got to feel it to heal it. And I had to.
Right.
And I went through a lot of pain. But my life is so much better because of it.
Doug, would you say your relationship with your wife, who's a spiritual intuitive, definitely helped you in your evolution?
Yes, no doubt. And I've helped her too, because I have a lot of insights that she's got a worldwide clientele and does daily meditations and try once a month daily cups of consciousness sessions. And so we come at the problem of unhappiness and unfulfilling lives from very different perspectives, but we come to the middle and we share a lot of our ideas and concepts, you know. And we do that every day. Right now we're building a website together and to sell some products that we really believe in. And it's fun to sit in front of the computer and what do you want this to look like? And she comes up with these ideas and then we're able to take our skills and bring them together to build something that's going to be very, very beautiful and serve a lot of people.
That's powerful. Holly, you said you wrote down some questions. I want to give you a couple of seconds to ask.
Oh, geez, I don't even know where they are. I have like all these notes everywhere. I think I'm just going to reach out to them later. I don't even know. Like I had like a moment where I just had to shift my like mindset on things.
That's fine. That's fine. I just want to make sure you had an opportunity.
They're all over the place.
No. Well, I actually have just one question for, I think, both Doug and Michelle, actually. What would you say the difference is? Because a lot of us experience trauma as children, right? And that absolutely shapes how we view the world, and it informs what decisions we make. So basically my question is, what do you think the difference is between someone who's experienced trauma and hurt and then gone out and hurt people, and then someone who's experienced trauma and then decided to do something different or take a different road?
Yeah, that's the big question. That's called resiliency. And the question is, why are some children able to be resilient and recover from trauma and other children are not able to be resilient, and so they are wounded? Nobody knows the answer to that question. And people are looking at it, but we're way, way, way a long ways away from trying to understand why that happens and why is it so idiosyncratic? You know, there's no predictability here.
Yeah, I mean, it's the way we're made up. And like Doug says, we don't know, because if a child experiences, say, sexual abuse as a young child, and he maybe grows up and he does the same thing to his children, and then there's the other child who from the same household grows up, experiences the same thing, but grows up and teaches people about it and what not to do to your children. We don't know. And like Doug said, it is resiliency. And I'm speaking on a summit in January all about resiliency. And it's really hard to determine what that catch is that makes one person one way and another person another. That's the whole nature-nurture controversy. That's the whole controversy in psychology.
Yes. And we're going to continue to have this conversation. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I absolutely love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Chima.
Okay, thank you. I just want to connect with young people, really, and try to, there must be young people out there that want to be empowered, want to do something different, they want to experience some satisfaction from doing a good deed, maybe an act of kindness, something like that. Those are the kind of things that we try to preach on the Fund on a Platform that we want to do eventually. You just get young people involved in having a good time, but helping each other and just sharing the, I don't know, the gospel of a good time, really, but also by empowering them to do something, at least for charity as well. Young people don't traditionally give, they don't have the money to give, they're not like the older generation that have lots of money to give, but they have the time to do it, they have more skills to share, and that's what we want to do, get people to share skills like that.
I think that's
wonderful. I'd like anyone to, if they have any question, they can connect with me directly. I can help, I can show them what we're trying to do, I can show them all the evidence of what we have to show that it will work and how it will work. And any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that, Chima. Holly, what do you have for us?
Well, I guess if anyone has any questions about Parties by Bellas and my business, they can just reach out to me. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram. It's literally just, if you Google Parties by Bellas, you can find me. If anyone's interested in doing a virtual party with some of their girlfriends, or like I said, you can, it could be couples, it could be whatever. We're doing a bunch of, what are those, white elephant parties now, which are a ton of fun. And I don't know if you just have any questions about that or interested in wanting to join and become part of it. We do a lot of fun things. So.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Ashley, what do you have for us?
I think generally, we can all agree that this year has been really difficult, right? Talking about, you know, experience, really without adversity, what is growth? There is no growth, right? So I think for me anyway, I just want to remind people that now is actually the perfect time. If you haven't started your spiritual healing journey, now's the perfect time, you know, in lockdown, during this global pandemic, during this moment of stillness for a lot of us, just do whatever you need to do to get in tune with yourself, whether that's meditation, reading, journaling, just, because it's really easy to just get overwhelmed by all of the information and havoc that's happening in the world. And if you do want any guidance with that, whether it's intuitive guidance by way of the tarot or just wanting to know, if you have any questions, feel free to contact me. I'm easily found on Instagram. It's just at Ashley Haynes, AshlyHaynes.
Thank you, Ashley. Michelle, what do you have for us?
First, Sharifa, thank you so much for having me on your platform. And what an amazing experience. And it's so great to meet each and every single one of you. It's so important for collaboration. Collaboration is key to sustainable change worldwide, not just here in the United States. And the one thing that I do want to leave everybody with, well, there's two things. First is one person can make a difference. So stand up and do something. I don't care what it is that you stand for, whether it's climate change or animal rights or women's empowerment or kids, whatever it is, take a stand for something, because this is my mission. And this is something, Unsilenced Voice is something that I'm never, ever going to stop. And it's going to go on for generations and generations to help people. And you can do the same thing, and you can help whatever it is that you choose to do so. And if it's all right with you, Sharifa, I would love to gift your audience a digital download of the introduction of my book. So if you're in the United States, all you need to do is take out your cell phones and text the word obstacles to 26786. Again, it's the word obstacles, plural, to 26786, and you will go ahead and get receive a digital download of the introduction of But I Love Him.
Thank you. I appreciate that offer. I hope everyone goes ahead and takes advantage of that. Doug, go ahead and close out the show.
Thank you, Sharifa. Yeah, it's been an interesting conversation. What a really interesting, diverse group of people. I mentioned the phrase earlier, learning how to listen to other people into existence. And I'm convinced from all of my work over the last 40 years that that is a foundational life skill that we cannot afford not to learn. If we want to stop putting people in prison, if we want to stop domestic violence, if we want to stop crime, if we want to lead fulfilling, happy, joyous, intimate, connected lives, we have to learn how to pay attention to our emotions. We have to abandon Plato. We have to abandon St. Augustine. We have to abandon all of these philosophers that have been so wrong for so many thousands of years. We are emotional beings, not rational beings, and we need to learn how to master our emotions and learn how to listen to other people's emotions. We do that, and life will be very different than it is today.
That was powerful. Where's the part about how they find you?
DougKnoll.com. I had teach a lot of courses on this stuff, and just go to the website. I've got a lot of resources there for people to read. My book, De-Escalate, is available everywhere. You can also get it off my website. And if you're called to the journey, then please reach out to me, Doug@DougKnoll.com, and I'm happy to have a conversation with you about where you're at and where you want to go. And if I can help you, I'll help you, and I can certainly point you to a lot of resources to learn how to listen to other people into existence.
Thank you.
If I forgot to say my one.
Pardon me now?
Chima. Yes, Chima.
Can I challenge everyone here to do the Fun Leap challenge? We just started a challenge called the Fun Leap. And all you need to do is look at the logo on fundonor.com and just do a leap like that. It takes 1, 2, or maybe 3 seconds and put it on TikTok, Instagram, anything, hashtag it. And we would just want to see if we can get that moving. So we just started, so it's quite new.
Okay, so Chima,
fundonor.com.
Chima, if I do that leap and all of that, then what's my prize? What'd I get?
Well, if you do the leap, you get a £5 immediate perk on the Indiegogo campaign. And that perk gives you a digital link to your profile that's shared all over the world. So it comes back as a permanent feature on the website when we build the platform. So you can it's always linked to you forever, in perpetuality.
Okay, but if I do my leap, I'm going to want it on the homepage. I want it everywhere. I'm not going to just leap for nothing.
But don't fall over. You can't fall over anything. You have to leap the file.
I want to thank you all for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. We definitely appreciate your support, but please don't just watch the show. Please share the show and visit our guests. Their websites, their information is in the Facebook post above. Contact them, reach out to them, send them a message. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to pick up your tickets to my New Year, New You 2-day teleconference on December 29th and 30th, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.